And this is the Night Shift. Thanks for your company tonight. Thanks for your calls. We're going to take a little break from the calls for a moment. Just do a little special interview. One of the most interesting criminals I have ever dealt with was Mark Brandon Chopper Reed. Not because he was a successful criminal. In fact, quite the opposite. He portrayed the myth that he was this wonderful criminal, standover man, controlled the underworld for years and years and years and so forth. But he wasn't. He did 23 years, 9 months in jail. And most of those were for doing stupid things, like trying to kidnap a judge to get his mate out of the psych ward at Ararat prison, for instance, silly things like that. So he created this massive myth. He wanted to be bigger than Ned Kelly. And I'd say arguably he is bigger than Ned Kelly these days in the Australian imagination. He's been gone now for several years. But part of his whole shtick was connecting with the media and connecting with his audience through his books. And he needed management for that. And one day, mild-mannered wine merchant Andrew Roper met Mark Chopper Reed in an airport and became his manager. And Andrew is with me tonight. Hello, Andrew.
G'day, Adam. How are you?
Good, mate. Thanks for joining us. How much of Mark Brandon Reed was fact and how much was fiction?
Well, he used to say it was fiction was 80% and 20% was real.
Yeah.
But that was his perception.
And he understood what the audience wanted. And
absolutely.
You helped him organize all these stage shows. How did that come about?
It was a bit of an interesting story because I was doing my wine work and I was in Perth and I met him and Jacko at the airport.
Mark Jackson, the AFL
player.
Yeah,
the Energizer man.
Mm.
But we're in the airport and we're at the Qantas lounge there and they were both sitting there and I actually lived most of my upbringing in England, so I didn't quite know who Chopper really was.
Seriously?
Yeah, I didn't. I mean, you know, he's pretty famous here, but
right.
I soon found out. But anyway, we were sitting there, and I just happened to be, wasn't deliberate by any means. I just happened to be sitting next to him, in the lounge there, and Jacko was this big, tall, loudmouth fella, and people were kept coming up to him and asking for his autographs and selfies and things like that. And so Jacko was going back to Sydney and so we were going to Melbourne and the lounge cleared out and there was pretty well just me and Chopper sitting there. It was pretty late in the evening. And so I just started to talk to him and we had a couple of drinks and he had some beer and I had some wine and then we just talked for about an hour before our flight. Basically, our flight was delayed, and we seemed to have a bit of a laugh together.
Yeah, right. And he needed to make some money to because he wasn't a crook anymore.
No,
not that he was ever a successful crook. And I'll get to his most successful heist ever, which was actually selling Channel 9 a massively bogus interview, which we'll talk about a bit later. And the formula was quite simple: get him on stage and tell those yarns. Getting him on stage was quite a process.
Yeah, well, I was working in the wine industry, so I didn't have any knowledge or experience of managing anyone or getting anyone on stage. But he'd been doing this for a couple of years with Jacko as his kind of pseudo manager, and I soon discovered there was a big problem happening, and I just came into that time. The timing of me and Chopper and Jacko was quite amazing because there was some suspicions going on from Mark and his wife Margaret about Jacko not paying him enough with all these tours.
Yeah, but there was you could never be paid enough, of course. And I think this has been the theme over the years that there's always someone not giving me enough cash. Mm. So you ended up taking over the whole management of the thing.
I did.
And it was quite lucrative. I mean, you would go to these country towns, and I've seen some of the footage, and you'd go to Bunnings, for instance, as part of the process, because there was these auctions during these performances. Yeah. What would happen there?
Well, that was one thing I introduced to them was I thought there was an opportunity there. Though Jacko was doing some auctions, but he was trying to sell his, I don't know, something that he was trying to sell, and I thought Chopper had more of a pull on his stuff, and he was doing his art, and he was doing also, signed flags and Australiana stuff and Southern Cross flags and things like that. So I just said to him, "Well, how about we do some hatchets, and and sign some handles." And so that was a good idea. So we ended up walking into a Bunnings in, I can't remember, the first one we did was up in Queensland somewhere, Mount Isa, I think it was, and just bought the whole, every damn axe in the place. And it was like, I actually did a deal with the manager. I said, they were pretty cheap as it was, but I think the hatchets were about, $15 or something like that.
Yeah. What'd you sell them for?
Some of them were $700, $800.
$700 for a $15 Bunnings axe. Yeah. Just because Mark had signed.
Never
it saying,
plead guilty.
He always pled guilty. That's bollocks from the beginning. He always pled guilty. Always.
Yeah, it's quite hilarious. Yeah. Actually. Yeah. So that was our biggest breadwinner on the tour, is actually. Yeah.
Yeah. And you could see behind the myth. Because he'd created this incredible myth through the 12 or 13 books that he'd written of being the toughest gangster in the world, but you saw a different side to him.
Yeah, I did. Outside of, public thoroughfare, he was quite an intelligent, quite a deep character. And he was, he had a lot of opinions on politics and life in Australia, and as well as his life as a criminal in prison, and a lot of stories there, which I suppose I could say now because he's gone, but stuff that hasn't been released and stuff.
Come on then, you just bloody teased us there.
Tame one, like. They used to get drunk on Brute 33, they used to high alcohol aftershave, it was the only alcohol they could get in.
And it would kill you, but you'd smell nice, sort of.
Or your breath would smell nice. After
Brute 33, if you reckon that's nice.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe
with all due respect, I'm wearing Brute 33 tonight.
I said to him, he should have tried Old Spice. That would have been a bit better.
Yeah.
Tastes a bit more like
I guess the thing about Mark Reeb was he spent so long in jail. He already had ADHD and he had issues since his childhood with mental health. And he comes out of jail, no management whatsoever of his mental condition. So he finds drugs. And I think what people don't realise is that he was a pretty heavy heroin user. And so forth, and you saw that over the years, and you actually were with him one night when he died.
That was a freaky story. We were living in East Melbourne at the time, and he was living in Collingwood, and he used to have a habit of coming around at odd hours, and he had some problems at home, but he also used that as a way to get out and score, I suppose, and whatever. And this one rainy, cold Melbourne night, freezing night, I remember it was. I get a call and from his wife, it's like, "Where's Chopper? Where's Mark?" And this is about 2 a.m. and maybe later, maybe 2:30, 3 o'clock. And I said, "Oh, look, I dropped him home." I've dropped him home about 11 o'clock from a night at the Comics Lounge in North Melbourne. And she said, "No, he's not home, can you come out and help me look for him?" So, I drove down there and picked her up, and she had a little boy with her
Little boy Roy.
And we went trawling the streets of Collingwood looking for him. And it was pretty grim night, actually.
And he was found in the side lane.
Yeah, well, Margaret got into. She said, "Oh, we've got to go to this hotel called the Barleycorn. He'll be in there. He'll be in there." So we drove up to there, and it was like, bear in mind, it was by this time 3 a.m, so it's pretty dark and miserable, So she gets out of the car and starts screaming the top of her lungs at the windows at the Barleycorn Hotel, and it's a derelict hotel. It's like
squatters in there.
And and she just started to raise the roof, and yeah, that time of night it's definitely quiet, you know, so the whole is very loud.
Yeah.
You know, Mark, get out of here, get out, come out of here, come out of here. I know you're in there.
There's no way he's going to come out.
No. So, and people were coming to the window and, you know, down the street and, you know, window curtains were fluttering. You know, it's like, yeah, it's like people were sticking their heads out from the place and shouting back at us, like, shut up, you know, just, he's not here, you know.
But he was.
He was.
And he turns up in the lane the following morning.
He was in the lane and ended up at St. Vincent's Hospital there on, you know, which he died and they brought him back.
Yeah, you know? He died then and he was brought back and, yeah.
But that was, you know, that's who I was dealing with really.
Right.
And you know, it was
What's amazing about Chopper was that even when he told the truth, people didn't want to believe him.
No.
They much preferred the lies. When he said, I've shot 50 people and I've cut off toes and, you know, all this type of stuff, people would believe it, even though he was saying to you, listen, I never let the truth get in the way of a good story. When he was dying, I got a call from him saying, I need some money for the family. I need to make, you know, a lot of money. With a media story. And I said, well, you told every story, every way, sometimes even truthful. What are you going to tell? Four murders. What? You didn't kill four people. You killed one bloke, Sammy the Turk, which you probably saw in the film Chopper, down at Bojangles nightclub. And that was self-defense. The other was, there's no murders there, Mark. Anyway, so he comes up with these stories, which he sold to Channel 9. And here's part of the interview. He talks about this biker, Sid Collins, who he did shoot in the stomach, but he then claimed he murdered him. So here's what he said on the show.
I shot him the first time with his gun. I shot him the second time with his gun. How stupid is this person? He is an idiot, complete idiot.
And this time, were you shooting to kill him?
Oh, yeah, this time I was shooting to kill him. Last time he just got it in the guts and had a trip to hospital. Very Christian last time. Not this time. Bang.
Why did you murder him?
Because he was an absolute turd.
A good enough reason, I guess. But the only problem was, at that moment when he was supposed to have been killing Sid Collins, he was on a tour with you guys.
Exactly. Yeah. he was grasping at straws all his life.
You know? But they so believed it. Well, my point is they actually believed it. He then said, I killed this pedophile inside Pentridge there. He made it this full
shot
story.
On his neck and all
for,
that
oh, yeah, this yeah, incredibly brutal yeah, murder. And he told it in 60 Minutes. And I was asked to actually check this. And I went to the coroner's file. And this bloke clearly had not been beaten to death.
No.
He had unfortunately committed suicide. Yeah. And Mark had just claimed it.
Yeah.
And when I told Nine, they said, yeah, fair enough. Okay.
Yeah.
So people wanted to believe it. And he got a large amount of money for that interview. And it was his greatest heist ever, in my view.
Well, that's it. I mean, he did what he wanted to do and he leaving his family with quite a bit of cash.
Yeah, that's right, indeed. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're out there and you're a Chopper Reid fan, this is the moment to ask those questions about the Chopper film, about actually, this is my favourite part of the film. I've just got Leroy on the hop here. He's having a sleep. Come on, Leroy.
You mean the Neville one?
Neville Bartos, part? Of course.
There's no cash here. Here, there's no cash, all right? Cash, no.
No cash. That's Vince Colosimo playing Neville Bartos from the Chopper Reid film. The interesting thing about Eric Banner and Chopper Reid is that once the film came out, Eric had spent time with Mark and had got some of the mannerisms and things, but he produced his own Chopper Reid. So once the film came out, Mark began then to act like Eric Banner playing Chopper. Course, Chopper himself was a creation of Mark in jail. So there was someone who made a character who someone else was playing, and then the creator was then going full circle.
No, it was interesting, but he used to incite the crowds at these live gigs we used to do around Australia, and he loved it. You know, he loved creating the Robin Hood factor, I called it, which is the public feeling sorry for him because he only ever harmed evil people, you know.
Mm.
He never harmed anyone.
Did you feel sorry for him?
I did. He was trapped in that character. And I used to, being so close to him for a number of years, it was like I just saw him switch like a, you know, a Jekyll and Hyde. It was like, you know, he'd be talking to me sensibly about something about politics or what's happened in Australia or whatever, and he's quite intelligent discussion, and then all of a sudden someone would come by and he'd switch into this crazy yeah. thug, you know.
That's right. So, that's yeah, right. Yeah. And the funny thing was, like I said before, he would create this image of never pleading guilty, but he always pled guilty.
Of course.
And when you talk to real crooks, none of them ever knew him.
No.
You know, he talks about being the, you know, the guy that ran the massage parlor thing in Melbourne, you know, like a gangster protection money. It never happened. Just never happened.
No.
And so real crooks, his real dominion was inside jail. And exactly. that's where he was king. That's where he felt at home. Yeah. So, and he was a massive Johnny Cash fan, wasn't he?
Yeah, yeah. He, we got on the road, basically. You know, I refer back to this Queensland tour in particular. On the road, it was like he wanted to have his music playing in the car, and it was always, you know, Johnny Cash.
Right.
And prison blues or whatever it was, you know. Right.
I'm talking to Andrew Roper, who was formerly Chopper Reed's manager, and let's have a bit of Johnny Cash for old Chopper.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line. I find it very, very easy to be true. I find myself alone when each day's through. Yes, I'll admit that I'm a fool for you. Because you're mine, I walk the line. As sure as night is dark and day is light, I keep you on my mind both day and night. And happiness I've known proves that it's right. Because you're mine, I walk the line. You've got a way to keep me on your side. You give me cause for love that I can't hide. For you I know I'd even try to turn the tide. Because you're mine, I walk the line. Heart of mine, I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
That's Johnny Cash there with I Walk the Line. Bit of country music for a change on Triple M. Normally a classic rock, but just in honour of Mark Brandon Chopper Reed, a bit of Johnny Cash there. And if you have any questions or memories of Chopper, you may have been to one of his shows in the regional areas, or you may have just seen the film. You got a special part of that film that you'd like to talk about, give us a call on 133353. Leroy's got a couple of questions here for Andrew Roper, Mark's former manager.
Well, Andrew, I'm from Tassie, and I know that Chopper did live in Tassie at one point. How long was he there for?
He was there, well, he lived in Melbourne with his early days, and then Pentridge and all that stuff, and then he went to Tasmania. I think he was there for about 4 years, maybe.
Yeah.
3 or 4 years. And he lived on like a like a little farm there.
Well, he married a girl down there, Marianne, who had been visiting him in jail in Risdon.
That's right.
And she was a very proper private school educated, you know, very, very middle class lady. And she became fascinated with Mark. And then obviously the jailhouse romance ensued, and then they ended up on the farm together, and it was just clear that it was not quite the same. And Mark was like a caged lion on that farm. He's he reckoned he chopped enough wood that there was no trees left. There was nothing else to do. And so he ended up back in town, and there was drinking and, you know, associated with a few crooks. And pretty soon he was back in trouble.
That's right.
Down there with shot Sid Collins in the guts.
Yeah.
There's been a few takes of him in mainstream media. Recently we had the Aaron Jeffrey series on Channel 9. A couple of years ago.
What do people think of that? I thought it was, I didn't think it was a great series, but I thought Aaron Jeffrey played a pretty good chopper.
Do you get referenced at all for something like that?
Not really. No.
No.
No, I try and keep it pretty low now.
Yeah. And what was his thoughts on the film Chopper, which starred Eric Banner, which of course.
That's a real can of worms with him. He,
was he consulted?
He was. Eric Banner went to Tassie to sit with him, as Adam said, and learn his mannerisms and whatever for the movie. But yeah, there was always this bitter taste in the mouth with Mark and Margaret about how they were treated with that movie and what they were promised and
but the
stuff
thing
like that.
What they always neglected to remember was the fact that he could not make any money because of proceeds of crime legislation.
Yeah.
So
they didn't understand that.
I think it was convenient to be honest.
I think so. I think so. And it was, his references to Mr. Gudinski and that, you know.
Right, we won't go there.
But
I also like the fact that in the end, that comedian Heath Franklin then took the chopper that had been created from the Banner portrayal and made a parody of it. Yeah, lip's not working. And I remember Mark watching a video of Ronnie John or Heath Franklin doing it and thinking, I've lost my identity. It's been stolen by this guy. Yeah. And even to this day, Heath Franklin still does Chopper.
People think
it's the real.
I know. I've got a funny story there. It's we are actually planning a tour of Victoria. And doing some old towns around Victoria, Ballarat and Bendigo and Castlemaine, all the places. I remember ringing some theatre in Ballarat, and the lady said to me, she said, "Oh no, he's just been here last week," you know. And right. I said, "No, he hasn't. He's been there last week." She said, "Chopper Reed." I said, "No, he hasn't. It's his, you know." So. No, they didn't want. We didn't do a show in Ballarat because she couldn't believe that Chopper had been there a week before. And I had put I actually sent a letter. It used to infuriate him so much because he used his name. You know, it was he changed it to Chopper only. But I remember sending a letter once to Ronnie John's management and saying. Can you on behalf of Mark? Can you desist? You know, you're ruining his income. Because you're blurring the lines. You know.
Yeah.
And I remember they were doing this show in Melbourne once. Ronnie Johns was down at South Bank Fringe or something like that, whatever it was. And I actually suggested I rang Ronnie Johns' manager. I said, "Hey, wouldn't it be good if we had actually Chopper on stage with Ronnie Johns?" I said, "How about what a great thing that would be?" You know, and this guy just absolutely retreated a million miles.
Yeah,
he just went, "No way!"
I wouldn't think that would appeal at all to them.
No. But, you know.
Cultural phenomenon, Mark Brandon. But you also got him a bunch of deals, which was fascinating. Suddenly, you were accessorizing criminal kind of stories.
Yeah. We went to that was part of my job, was to get him deals and keep him cashed up and keep him happy and off the streets and whatever. And it became obvious that this was a way that we could kind of harness him a bit.
Because you did ringtones.
Yeah, ringtones was great. I mean, they earned some very big dollars out of that.
So he recorded basically ringtones and, Brisbane, and busy messages and things.
Busy, you know, you'd ring up and buy a, you know, you'd buy for $5 or whatever, you'd buy a chopper message to when someone rang you, say, you know, open up, it's chopper raid. You know, it's like, you know, all this type of stuff. But we, I remember we spent like 3 days in a studio in this ringtone company in Brisbane, and it was like, that was hilarious. It was hilarious. In fact, I got a lot of footage on that, which is fantastic.
Fantastic, yeah. Well, we're talking to Andrew Roper, who was Mark Chopper Reed's manager. There was a podcast on Podcast One Australia where I interviewed both Andrew and Mark's other manager, Andrew Parisi, and all the stories there about Chopper Reed, Podcast One Australia, The Real Chopper. Mm.